All right, quite a number of people reporting instances whilst they were driving in the Lesnennan area. We heard earlier of potatoes and eggs being chucked. Other stuff happening as well, right? So keep them coming into us. The Gardaí will probably, hopefully, the more we talk about it, put an emphasis on educating those who are responsible that it's not the right thing to do. Right, now, do you know what there is to do in Castlefin? Do you know what facilities there are around town? Well, all those questions are going to be answered. Maybe not all now, Mary Dunyan, member of the About Town, About the Town campaign, but certainly in an event that's coming up on the 19th. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Thanks for having us on this morning.
Oh,
it's great to have you on. Right, okay. So talk to us about the About the Town initiative and why it's taking place.
It was an idea by one of our organisers on this committee, Nolene Killen, and she works with us at Vincent de Paul and Castlefin. And she just came up with the idea to think that it would be great to showcase what we have on offer. I think very often, sometimes, Greg, you know, in rural areas, we're not given the recognition for what does go on, you know, and Castlefin's a small town, population about 800. But when we had our first meeting, we invited a lot of different representatives from different organisations. We had the CPA, the Vincent de Paul, we had our national school, and we had our soccer and our Gaelic clubs, and we had the Tidy Towns, and there was 12 people at the meeting, and we started to go through all the different organisations that we had in the town, and we were thinking, oh, I never heard of that. So it's got great interest and a really great buzz about it, you know, so a lot of people are looking forward to the event, but I think it is just showcasing what we have on offer, you know.
I think it's great. I think every area should do it, because firstly, sometimes people want to get involved in things, but they might not think that it's open to them for whatever reason. You know, it's us as individuals. Yeah. We've got our own little barriers we put up for ourselves. But also it's an opportunity for people then to turn up and see what's there for them. They might be surprised. But also for different groups or organisations to recruit new members as well. So it's a win-win for all involved, I think, and gives people an opportunity, gives them a table to sort of get all their information across.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And credit goes to all the volunteers, Greg, that go out in all weathers, and, you know, especially the likes of the soccer and the Gaelic clubs we have. But there really is so much on.
Drama, you know, dancing, history, knitting.
Yes.
Kids clubs. And much more, especially for people. We often get calls and texts in, you know, Mary, and I'm sure you are aware, from people who've moved to an area. And they don't know who to talk to. They don't necessarily have a friends group next. They don't know what's on offer. They don't know what's good for them or their kids or whatever it might be. Again, or maybe people are starting to feel a wee bit lonely at home or something, and they're wondering, is there something I could get involved with in my local community to sort of pass the time? All fantastic reasons to attend, I think, Mary.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we have noticed that, you know, during COVID and post-COVID, Greg, there's a lot of families that have moved back to the area. Yeah. But as well as that, you were saying there just about loneliness and isolation and mental health, you know, we really have to try to be inclusive and have things for everybody of all ages. So we have like our Monday Club, we have our over 65s, we have our young dancers, we have, as you say, there's just so much. We have the defibrillator group, we have Tidy Town. So there's no excuse not to do something in Castlefin. It's just, there's so much that's there really, do you know. So
it's a really good indictment too of the community and its people, isn't it? That there's so much going on and that you have enough to go on to justify a night to bring it all under the one roof.
Yeah, no, and we actually had an event there in December where we had turning on of the Christmas lights and the blessing of the crib. And again, it was a few organisations that came together and it was such a huge event. The turnout was amazing. But it's great, I think, that everybody works together. There is a great community spirit, you know, and the school is very involved as well with the Tidy Towns, and they've been out planting wee bulbs and putting up wee bird boxes and things like that, you know. So there is, and they also had a competition recently where the Tidy Towns and the children in the school entered a competition and was to do with bat conservation, and then the older people judged the paintings that they did. So there is a great sense of community there. So it's
and we're sort of trying to reach those too, and I think a lot of people listening can relate, that have been in a community for a very long time but don't necessarily feel a part of it, even if they are viewed as such. Do you know what I mean? And maybe this is just that little bit of reassurance or kick on or whatever, because there'll be plenty of smiles and handshakes and tea and coffee and buns, I'm sure, as well.
It is a social occasion, and as you say, like, I've been in the town for years, and there's things that are going on, and I didn't even know about.
How long have you been in the town?
Well, I was away for a good while, and then, but I've been back now over, I would say, oh my goodness, 25 years.
You're still
years
a blowing. More. Sorry, still a blowing.
But it is a
result. Another 20
occasion.
Years before you're back, back official, a Castlefinian.
But no, it's going to be a wee social occasion because there's, as you say, tea and scones and tray bakes, and we'll have a bit of local entertainment as well on the evening. So, So
and no more than and more than any other event, this is literally an everybody welcome.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. All ages, everybody welcome. And as I say, we have even support services, and we have the Gardaí, and we have our local councillors. So we've opened it up to be inclusive to everybody, you know. So in case you do need to maybe call help or whatever, at least, you know, we'll have those organisations there as well.
All right, so it's an open invitation to everyone in and about the town, Castlefin. It's in St Mary's Hall, Castlefin. Again, even just the running, maintenance, opening, caretaking of a local community hall, you know what I mean? It takes people to do that, and I think that's always a great sign of an area. And actually, I was chatting to the ladies who are responsible for the maintenance and running, the brains and everything behind the hall in Carrigart. I didn't mention them. Now that I'm talking about Castlefin, I shall mention them because they are the heart and soul of little facilities like this. Beautiful food too they put on as well. Lovely tea. Anyway, I'm talking about one place and we're talking about another. St Mary's Hall, Castlefin, 5 p.m. It's a nice time of the day as well. It'll be nice and bright on February 19th, at least for the first wee while. And that, what day of the week's that?
That's Sunday.
This coming Sunday.
Yeah, that's coming
Excellent.
Sunday. Yeah.
All right. And any, I presume, have you a full complement of the local organisations, Mary, or is there still a table available for?
We're having another meeting now on Wednesday night just to finalise it, but you can be in touch with any of our groups. But at the minute, we have about 25, I think, different.
But isn't that brilliant?
Yeah. For a small town, it's absolutely amazing, you know. Okay. The minute we're about 25 or more, so we'll have the final numbers on Wednesday night.
Right.
But if anybody wants to get in touch, just even call into the St Vincent de Paul or message some of us on Facebook and we can give you more information.
We've had
a lot of calls from businesses as well in the Finn Valley, but I think that could be a later event. I think tonight, Sundays, is just really going to be about sort of the volunteers and the different organisations within the town. But certainly we've had a few calls from businesses wondering.
Sounds like a little future fundraiser coming up. More than welcome, 30
yes,
euro
absolutely.
Per table.
Absolutely.
All right, come here. Listen, if you don't find something that interests you with 25 groups and organisations represented, I'd be surprised. So listen, I think it's going to be a lovely event this Sunday, 5 p.m. in St Mary's Hall, Castlefin. Everybody's welcome. Come along, see what the community has to offer. And as we mentioned, the sports clubs, drama, dancing, history, knitting, kids clubs, so much more, and members of all organisations will be available on the day showcasing their clubs and event. And if nothing else, call in for a chat and some light refreshments.
That's it.
I can do no more for you.
That's brilliant, Greg.
All right,
thank you
take
so
care.
Much.
All right, bye-bye. Lovely to have you on the show. That's Mary Dunyon. Any other initiatives like that in your local area, get in touch with us and I would be more than happy to get that information out there because that's what we're here for, isn't it? That's part of what we're here for. Right, should we take a quick break and then get Brendan Devaney in for a chat. I just want to read a few comments, though, as we head towards that. It is Monday, yes it is. Greg, I saw those young boys too. They're lighting aerosol cans and throwing them in front of cars. Someone is going to get seriously injured. It was the same during the snow. The area was covered with young boys throwing snowballs. So hopefully now something will be done about it. Well, hopefully. And we don't want to tar and feather anyone. But if there are people that are engaging in that activity, and again, I'm going to get shot for saying this, maybe they don't realise the potential of their actions, the potential consequences. So we'll give them a chance to mend their ways. Hi, Greg. I got a call from the test centre to say my commercial vehicle test, which was today, had been cancelled. They told me to contact a test centre in Letterkenny as they wouldn't be carrying out any tests in the near future due to the one of the workers being off. Surely they have more than one person who inspects vehicles. Just wondering, did anyone else get a call? That comes in from John. I'm not begrudging anyone getting bonuses or handouts, but is it not high time workers on low wages got some help? Even the dismissal of the USC would be a start. Having to pay €100 per week on diesel to travel to work is a big bite out of our wages before even doing a grocery shop. Lots of workers would be financially better off on social welfare, but prefer to work, but there is no incentive to work. And that has been a statement that we've heard for a long, long time. It's nothing new. Right, okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. In studio with me now is the one and only Brendan Devaney. Hi, Brent.
Yes, Greg.
What's the story?
All good in the hood, hey. Mondays, we're fresh, we're at it.
Excellent. Right, now, take note, because we often talk about it's going to be a great show coming up, right? But I think tonight's show has...
You mean it this time?
No, yeah, but there are levels of greatness, right?
Yes.
And I think this one is going to be up there. We're going to talk about that, but obviously also you're going to have a quick look back over the weekend's action as well. The usual.
Hey, rounded up, yeah. Our hurlers, 2-2, another brilliant victory away to London. Greg, so they're sitting top of the pile. They're playing Meath, who are also 2-2 next week. Our under-20s are their first day out. They came up short against Derry. They play Sligo next week, Greg, so we'll be taking a look at that. But obviously, as you say, we've got three legends coming up to the studio, Greg. We normally have a studio guest, but a very special week this week.
Right, so Michael Murphy, Neil Gallagher, and Michael's father, Mick.
Yes.
I mean, that is some trio. How did you pull that off?
Listen, I suppose I know the three of them quite well.
Yeah, of course.
I'm lucky enough. Of course, Glenn Swilly had their 40-year anniversary there, and particularly with Donegal not having a senior GAA game last week, I was on to Michael already, but coming up to do a wee bit of analysis a day if he could after maybe the home game against Galway or Roscommon. But I just thought about it and I threw the question out to the lads, particularly I suppose looking at the 40 unbelievable years where Glenn Swilly have come in that time. And I just thought the dad, obviously Michael and Neil, you know, need no introduction whatsoever, but I thought Mick, then the dad, another man steeped in Glenn Swilly and Donegal GAA in so many levels. But I just thought it'd be great to hear his word on Michael too, kind of behind the scenes, if
100%.
You like, and be very interesting, because Michael would have one way of looking at it and, you know, sport in terms of that, but then Mick could give us tell us what life was like. And of course, what a brilliant journey for him.
But what is it like being the father of, you know, pound for pound, Donegal's best footballer?
That's it.
I mean, you know, and how you see that evolve, or when did you spot it, especially with him being so involved in GAA himself. Yeah. It's going to be a unique and really, really interesting chat.
Any one of them would be interesting in the
100%.
Home, Greg. You know what I mean? So to get, and you're right, maybe not just all, I suppose, Mick, in terms of his comments on Michael, but like, as you said, you know, having that thing of going to a game, and listen, we all want their best for our kids and want them to play
but
sport.
I'm sure we'll hear about it. You live every moment.
And because he was such a heart and soul GA man himself, and I mean, it must have been an amazing thing for him to go and watch Michael lead Donegal the way he did. And of course, the ultimate thing, I think, for any dad, if your son was the captain Donegal, they left to Sam. I mean, is there anything greater in sporting terms in this county? Of course there isn't. So, I mean, it must be a phenomenal time, of course, it was for him as well. And I suppose you have that wee bit of sadness nearly tinged with it that era has come to an end. But in many ways, I suppose, when you look at it, I mean, what a brilliant, brilliant time it was. So,
well, listen, we, you know, in terms of what we achieve in our lives, you know, to be able to leave a legacy like that is just absolutely, and then to be so young, to be able to maybe create an entire new chapter down the line, who's to say what a gift, and to do it so gracefully and determinedly and finally. I just think, but as I say too, I'm not going to ask the questions, I'm going to listen to someone who knows what they're talking about ask the questions. So I think it's going to be a really good chat.
And listen, I was just, when you're on about Michael in the next chapter, obviously he's out in the LYAT there. He's done bits and pieces of coaching. He has a sports shop. You know, he's media stuff. Like, boys like me, Greg, would have to kind of make a lot of contacts in the game. And you'd have to push a bit harder. Not that I ever really actually did push. I just kind of let it kind of happen. But you certainly would have to, as I say, open the doors for Michael. You mentioned Michael's name. The door's open. I mean, I would say he's inundated with people requesting things from him.
100%.
That's why I'm glad he's coming up here tonight. But listen, Silent Radio.
But listen to you too.
We're the boys that bagged him his whole life. You know?
You're the old dog for the long road too. That's at this stage. You're good old reliable.
Old dog. I'm on the old dog territory now. Jeez, that's a good
guy. Everyone's getting up. Like, Lee Gooch is. Can I say? Yeah, he's 50 tomorrow.
See him upstairs. He's, I tell you what, he's young looking.
I know
50,
you're nowhere near that, but. We're all getting
I'm
older.
Not far off it, lad.
Right, anyway. So, listen. Is that live? Are they live in studio?
Live, yeah. Live,
brilliant. Okay,
live,
so
yeah.
It might be streamed too. For
streamed,
people
yeah. Streamed
it.
On the
gonna,
Facebook.
Right, I'm going to watch it then. Yeah. That's what I'm going to do at 7. I'm going to watch it live. But it's also available then as a podcast. And, you know, you get four real proper GEA men in a room. You're going to have an interesting conversation.
Yeah, yeah. One of them likes to act a mick. There's a couple of mics in the room as well, but it'll be. Listen, we hope the lads are great crack to you and that. So hopefully get a couple of stories off them. And that's why I think, Greg, this week of all week, we can really dedicate the show to the chat, because you would see it here, the way the time goes. Whenever your wee mic goes light there, it's just, you know, the hour just goes by. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm trying to break the habit, but I also have a habit of trying to, because there's so much to get through, trying to move it along. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? But that's the great thing. I was going to say that's the great thing about having longer format, but it's never long enough.
Yeah.
So we'll see how you fare.
And the same thing, Greg, sometimes when you look at the time and, you know, you see you've, say, 20 minutes to go, I think, oh, great. Because next thing it's squashed. It just seems, I don't know, it goes so fast. Yeah. So you want to obviously cover as much as you can. And
all right. Okay. So the DL debate tonight, two All-Ireland winners from 2012 in Michael Murphy and Neil Gallagher, along with Michael's dad, Mick. Yes. Who's got his own legacy as well. So, you know, between the jigs and the reels, it's going to be a cracker. And also, as you mentioned, the full roundup of the weekend's action. But you know what? I'd fly through that and just get onto that chat.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? With no disrespect to the weekend.
I'm already, I don't want to regret the clock, you know, because sometimes you're like, oh, I could have figured that out a bit, but sure, that's half the fun, you know.
Good. Obviously, there's a. I don't know how big a story is, and it's kind of like a personal story. And I'm not. I can probably think there's more going on here with an individual, and I would be. You know, I would. I hate to see anyone going through an awful situation, but there is a GAA legend who's alleged to have got money off 100 people. Over $1 million, and the details of the story about, you know, being told they had cancer and so on and so forth. It's a difficult story for the victims, but I imagine also if for the person. This person's had contact with you. You understand the background to this story, Brandon. We're going to be careful, aren't we?
No,
Brandon,
I understand. But, do you know why, Greg? Because, I mean, talking about legends, this man is a complete and utter legend. You know, people, the legend word gets thrown about. I mean, there are definitely two coming up to the studio tonight, but this guy is one of the greatest ever, and he's just fallen in hard times. And an absolute gentleman of a man, Greg, and that's why this... I mean, it's actually shocking to see this. Now, I got to know him years ago, and he did put a call out to me, just telling me about the financial situation, about the woes, and, you know, it wasn't he was asking me, I'm far from somebody who could be donating to anybody, but he did throw out the question, was there anybody around that he could contact, you know. And I was very surprised at the time to call, but I really got a sense of desperation from him, Greg, you know. But as I say,
and were you told there was things going on that he needed money for, or...?
He didn't actually explain what the money was actually for. He just asked, was there anybody that would be... You know, we have them all around, GAA men, that back things and put money into things, and it's great that we have them. So he was just asking, did I know anybody? But... It was a very strange call to get, because I have got to know him, and he's one of the nicest people I've met out there. So whatever's happened, I don't know where this has come from in terms of... But the fact that he was ringing me where I was, he's a good bit away from us, Greg, you know. I was thinking to myself, the fact you're, like, I said it to my wife at the time, she's the only person I told. It was as if I said he must be casting the net, so he must be under pressure.
You are a caring person, like, I know that. I'm not embarrassed, and maybe people don't realise that. So I think you would be the type, as I think I am as well, that would think there's probably something behind this that needs digging into as well. And do you know what I mean?
It's
a scandal. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah, he had business woes years ago, Greg. So I don't know what the cause is behind this, because I think probably there must have been bankruptcy or whatever there. So I don't understand what has happened in this instance. So.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a sad tale. The amount of people involved, I mean, it's a lot of money too, you know.
It is. Okay. And there clearly was desperation in there, because you would have to be desperate to sort of say you were sick if you weren't and stuff.
That's it, yeah.
All right, okay. Listen, Brendan, I just want to wrap up on the positive thing that... just to remind you, you've just switched on the DL debate tonight. It's going to be a real special one, because Michael Murphy's up in studio with Neil Gallagher, and also Michael Murphy's dad, Mick. It's going to be a cracking conversation. It's just after the 7 p.m. news. We're going to have to get Michaela to read really quick to get you in, Brendan. All right. And yeah. Also, if you miss it, though, if something else is on this evening, of course, it's going to be podcast for you on highlandradio.com. And hopefully it's video streamed as well, so you can watch, but also watch back on YouTube. So that's the DL debate. It's a particularly special one with Brendan Devaney tonight from 7 p.m. And it's all... in association too with the great folks at Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. They do a curry night on a Friday, I think, you know.
They do, yeah.
Very tempting.
We've been down there this last while.
That's not, when he says we, it's not me and Brendan.
I'm contracted
anywhere
to eat there, Kieran Brogan tells me, but no, he doesn't actually. I said that to him the last day when somebody was on about it. But we were down with our family a couple of weeks ago, like upstairs. So it's such a massive place, Sister Sarah's, you know. Right. So I'm always paranoid about the kids. So we had this...
the noise of them?
Well, there's a whole squad of them, you see, with us, you know. Kids. But see, upstairs there, they basically had their own space, so they were allowed to run amok.
I love how you call your children a whole squad.
Well, all our family were there, I meant, you
know.
The nieces and nephews, so it was... the noise good level stuff. Just goes up, you know, but anyway...
Of course it does. I love that sound. Yeah. I love the sound of kids, I really do. Yeah. It never bothers me really at all. I don't know, there's just something about the future in it.
I think if you have kids, it's fine.
Yeah, you have a filter, don't you?
Yeah,
you
kind of. Like, what do you call it? Mill Park Hotel.
Yeah, Donegal Town.
We stopped in there yesterday, come back. We were down at I was down at Aaron Gill's dinner dance on Saturday night, and we had a great night, and we stopped in for a quick bite there. But like, we walked in, I was having a crack with staff, because my two boys are a bit nuts, the two younger boys. But there was there was a huge family presence in there, and there was a lot of noise. And I was just sat down, oh God.
I'm comfortable here.
No worries. Yeah. my kids were quieter than the rest, so yeah.
Okay. So we're giving casual mentions to the Mill Park.
Oh, sorry.
Sarah's, you know what? It's all good. It's all good. Listen, all right, Brendan.
Thanks, Greg.
Good luck with the show. You don't need luck. It's going to be a cracker. All right, take care. Today, Monday the 13th of February, is International Epilepsy Day. And on Monday Focus, we talked to Niamh Watson about living with epilepsy and how you can live a very normal life while having it. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us, Niamh.
Good morning, Greg.
Is that the right way to phrase it? Is that how you see living with it, able to have a normal life? Are you comfortable with phrasing it like that, or do you see it differently?
Yeah, no, for me, it is very much about not letting my epilepsy hold me back. So, yeah, it is about living a life the same as everybody else and doing the same things as everybody else. So, yeah, that's exactly how I would phrase it, yeah.
So you're just 24, but you were diagnosed with epilepsy at a young age. So, I mean, obviously, that is a life event. I presume at that time it was particularly significant, Niamh.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was 13 whenever I was diagnosed with epilepsy. I had my first typical tonic-clonic seizure, so that's when you fall to the ground, jerking. The one that everyone thinks of whenever it comes to epilepsy. So I had my first typical seizure whenever I was 12, and then I got diagnosed whenever I was 13. So I need to say, it wasn't always like this. There was a time in my life that I was taking seizures every day, and it was a lot harder to live a normal life then.
Yeah,
so
for
it's,
sure.
And
in terms of diagnosis, would that be seen as a quick diagnosis or a slow diagnosis? Because some people can be waiting quite some time, I think, to get that initial diagnosis.
Yeah, so I suppose it's different for everybody, but I was waiting almost a year for my diagnosis because I suppose they ran a lot of different tests, and some tests were coming back inconclusive, or the results weren't very clear. So I suppose with some of the tests that they run, you have to have a seizure whilst they're doing the test, so that can prolong the diagnosis period as well. So yeah, about a year for me to get diagnosed with epilepsy. But some people, it really is individual as to how long it can take.
Yeah, and what is happening with epilepsy? What is what causes epilepsy? You know, in the individual, rather than, we might talk about triggers if there are any, but in other words, is it hereditary? Is it random, or what? What causes epilepsy itself?
Yeah, so a lot of people, it depends really.
Right.
They're hereditary. So in some cases, it can be caused by a brain injury in some cases. And then some cases like mine, we don't really know the cause because I have no family history and I didn't ever have a brain injury. So sometimes you can just have epilepsy, but sometimes it is hereditary and sometimes there is brain injury causing epilepsy. So yeah. It's different for everybody, I suppose.
Yeah, and we'll get on to medication and stuff. But initially, I mean, I think the only, if you asked regular society, and that's not excluding anyone, I just mean people out and about, if you ask them, they would say, well, flashing lights is what causes epilepsy, because that's what they might see. They'll see the flashing light warning on TV. Is that just one of what could be the triggers? I presume it's not a trigger for everyone for epilepsy, or is it? Can you give us an understanding of that, please?
Okay, so the photosensitive epilepsy is actually not as common as people would think it is. So very, very few people would be affected by photosensitivity alone. Some people would have photosensitive alongside other triggers. But for me personally, my triggers would be extreme tiredness or stress. Pardon me. And I know that that's the common one, is tiredness. So it's really important to look after yourself and get enough sleep and try and minimize stress.
Keep yourself well hydrated and all the stuff to keep you at peak. So in terms then of medication, okay, is it a case of try and see as to what might work for you, and you try and hone that so the gaps between episodes widens out and out as far as possible?
Exactly, yeah. So it really is trial and error with a lot of medications. I'm lucky enough that I'm on one form of medication, whereas some people would be on two, three different types of medication and different dosages, and dosages have to be altered and everything. So it really depends on the person. What works for me might not work for somebody else, and you know, what works for them might not work for me. So,
and am I correct in saying that sometimes medication, a type of medication, can be quite effective, but that effectiveness can wane over time, and then a person might need to refine the medicines again? In other words, you don't know if you're set for life on this one medicine necessarily.
Exactly. That's what happened to me. Initially, so I was seizure free for a few years, from when I was about 14 till I was around 18. But then, like that, I suppose I became desensitized to the medication and had to be changed, because my body had gone through big changes between the age of 14 and 18. So that had to be reviewed then, and I had started having seizures again. So they changed my medication then, and I've been good so far.
Brilliant.
So.
And you know, we're all different, right? And we all have different ways of coping and abilities to cope. And it's clearly that you're not letting anything hold you back. You are powering forward. But there are others who might get this diagnosis. And I think maybe mums and dads and guardians, they might get more stressed about this than the individual themselves. I don't know. We're all different. But how difficult was it for you at 12 or 13? Did you take it in your stride very early on? Or did you have to sort of get acclimatized to the fact that maybe, you know, your life is going to be different going forward? It'll be ordinarily the same as much as possible, as we've talked about. But in terms of taking a regular medication and what have you, did it take a while for you to get used to that? Because at that age, you had an awful lot going on anyway, with this on top, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I suppose for me, time to come to terms with it, because we did suspect that it was epilepsy. So I think I had time to come to terms with it before my actual diagnosis came through. And it is different for everybody, and it can be very scary whenever you get diagnosed, because I didn't really know much about epilepsy before I was diagnosed. So it takes, and that's where Epilepsy Ireland really helped me. Like, they helped me to figure out what my life might look like from here forward, and they were able to provide advice and support to allow me to know that I would live a full life the same as everybody else. So they provide support to families as well, so they were able to give my mum guidance on how to help me whenever I was going through this as well. So
yeah.
They were great through that, and I would recommend that to anybody who's recently diagnosed. Agnes in the Letterkenny office is brilliant, and she's able to provide a lot of support surrounding newly diagnosis and all of that.
I presume for some it might be tempted to withdraw in, do you know what I mean? To not maybe go on to third level in case something happened in Dublin and, you know, my support network's in Donegal, or to wrap yourself up in cotton wool or not go travelling or whatever. And that's understandable, and this is a judgment-free zone. But I presume, you know, there are different paths you can take on this. You can take that path, and if it works for you, that's fine. Or you can say, you know what, I'm going to do whatever I wanted to do in any case. Is that a fair enough assessment, do you think, maybe, of what could be out there?
Yeah, and I think it's, I suppose a lot of it is how your family respond and how you react in the immediate aftermath of getting that diagnosis. My family were brilliant. They pushed me to achieve everything that I would have ordinarily achieved. So, like, my mum, whenever I got my diagnosis, I was out and about. I wasn't held back in any way. It would have been, I suppose, it would have been her natural instinct to wrap me up in cotton wool, but I suppose you have to try and let the person live a normal life so that it doesn't restrict them in any way. So yeah, I think that was instrumental in my journey with epilepsy, was that I was encouraged to do everything that everyone else does and not to let it hold me back. So I think that's why I am where I am today.
Excellent. Maybe we should talk a little bit about what we should do if someone has a seizure, because that comes up from time to time, and I think it really is important info, and people do different things now than they did in the past. And people try and put spoons in people's mouths and all that kind of stuff, which is a big no-no, I understand. So if you feel happy enough, Niamh, what if someone suspects someone around them or in the street or something is having an episode, or do you call it a fit, or how do you prefer to describe it? A seizure, right? Okay, a seizure, because I'm old and it's been called different things over time. So what do you do if someone has a suspected seizure in your presence?
So I suppose the main message that Epilepsy Ireland are putting out this year is just three words: time, safe and stay. So you time the seizure, you keep the person safe. So that could be, you can't stop a person from having a seizure. So that could be just putting a cushion under their head, rolling up a hoodie, putting it under their head if they're close to hitting something. Just try.
So don't try and restrain them in any way, shape or form, of course.
Anyway, the seizure is going to happen either way. You have to let it run its course. So it's just a case of minimising the injury that the person might get from that. So if they're next to something sharp, just shielding them from that, but not restraining them. Yeah. And I suppose the next point comes into that too. So stay with the person. So just stay with them and provide them with reassurance whenever they do come around, because that's so important, because it's scary whenever you come around from a seizure, and it's important that you have somebody with you to be there, I suppose, to reassure you. So that's the main message that we're trying to get across, is time the seizure, stay with the person, and try and keep them safe. So that's the main three words. If we can get that across, then that's a big achievement.
Brilliant stuff. Because obviously you're looking after your lifestyle. I'm sure you eat well and exercise and try and sleep and reduce stress as much as possible. Do you, part of you sometimes think, should I try and do this without medication? That maybe I've got, you know, I know maybe what my triggers are, and I hope I can keep a handle on that. Does it be tempting to try that, or is it completely ill-advised, Niamh?
It is ill-advised, unless it's under the control of your neurologist, under the guidance of your neurologist, because I suppose it would be very easy for me to be like, now, oh, I'm 3 years seizure-free nearly, I could just do this without medication. But you have to remember that you're on this medication for a reason, and that just because you're seizure-free on the medication, it doesn't mean that you'll be seizure-free whenever you come off it. So it's really important that any changes to medication would be done under the careful guidance of the neurologist, because they're the specialists in the area. They'll know what'll work for you, or if it's a case of weaning yourself off them, they'll figure out what's the best path for you. But I would never recommend to go off medication without medical guidance.
You mentioned your mother earlier on, and she wasn't only supportive in sort of saying, I'm here for you if you want to do this, that and the other. She actually pushed you, didn't she? So she actually encouraged you to sort of say, no, you can do this and you can do that, and I'm here with you. A great person to have around you, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. I've been very lucky with my family and friends. Like, it's never held me back because they've never allowed me to be held back by it. There is no such thing as wallowing and sitting in and, I suppose, isolating myself from others, because it would be so easy to do that, because it's scary and you don't want to have a seizure in front of new people. It's a lot to deal with, but it's really, really, that was a massive part of my journey, was that I was encouraged to carry on and have the same life as everybody else and live the life that I wanted to live. So
yeah.
I suppose my family and my boyfriend and everyone, they really helped me to gain that independence and to empower me to do everything that I wanted to do.
Which,
so, yeah,
as well as everything else, presumably relieves any, you know, helps relieve stress as well, because you have that support. Not only that, though, you've got your degree in your bag and you now work as an education officer with the Rape Crisis Centre and doing really important work in teaching in schools about consent and also learning to drive, right? So what's the criteria for that, in terms of, you know, the time between a seizure and what's the story going forward in terms of learning to drive?
So I am currently doing my driving lessons.
What number are you on?
Oh, I'm on 10, but I will need probably at least
So you're halfway there.
Not very good, but that's nothing to do with the epilepsy. And so you have to be a year seizure free to start learning to drive. To apply for your theory, even, you have to be a year seizure free. So, and I suppose that it differs for everybody. So some people, if it's just nocturnal seizures, that like seizures that they have in their sleep, the rules, the criteria might change for that. But the standard rule of thumb is 1 year seizure free, and you would have to get a medical report from your neurologist or your GP in order to sign you off to be able to drive. But yeah, for a lot of people, that is a hurdle, because I know people who've been 11 months seizure free and then had a seizure, and that sets you back to the to the full.
And also too, in terms of car dependency, a lot depends on where you live and stuff. Like, I mean, you might have someone in Dublin that never has an intention to drive in any case. But I mean, obviously with us here, or if you intend just driving around and travelling, it's more important. And just finally, again, you talked about the support of your family and your boyfriend, which is hugely important. But you've also mentioned Epilepsy Ireland. So what was critical about their sort of informational support in your experience, Niamh?
Yeah, so whenever I was first diagnosed, we got in touch with Agnes, who is works in their office up here, who runs the epilepsy up in the Northwest. So we went into her, and I suppose at least she knew the exact facts and the exact how to help us, I suppose. And it was really, really great. I remember she gave me an epilepsy diary so that I could log any seizures or basically log my entire day so I could figure out my own triggers. And I remember she ran a group for young people with epilepsy to get together and get to know each other. And I remember that you could bring a friend. So I brought my friend, and I suppose it made my friend more comfortable to know what to do whenever I had a seizure, and to know that this wasn't as scary as it needed to be.
Because it visually is scary. Let's call it as it is. It's, if you don't know what's going on, it's panic stations. Yeah. That's why we're having this chat here.
Absolutely. And I suppose for me, education and awareness is huge in reducing that fear and the stigma, because I know what's scary. It is. Of course it is, looking at somebody having a seizure and having basically not been able to do anything to help them. But once
okay not to be able to do anything, because we do. So, but you make sure you clear the space, you stay with the person so that you time it for them, presumably, and you wait to explain when they come around, because I presume it takes a little while. Epilepsy Ireland use that, and it's important too, because, you know, 1 in 100 people, bar the shouting in Donegal, have epilepsy. 1 in 100. So it's 1,500. It's a little bit less than 1 in 100, but there you have it. Some people maybe aren't fully diagnosed yet. Madeline messaged in to say, please congratulate Niamh. She's a fabulous, inspirational young lady. That's just a sample of the nice comments coming in. Okay, Niamh, continued success with you in your career and your driving and all that. 10 lessons in, as you say, halfway, third of the way there, maybe. But we look forward to seeing you out about the road. And you're a great advocate and an inspiration. And I think that, you know, if parents have a young person newly diagnosed, it would be nice for them to listen back to someone who's 10, 13 years down the line and to say that, you know what, this is your life you can have as well. Exactly, that's it. And I think that's why it's so important when people like you speak out, because it's not put me saying it, you're relatable. And I think, you know, your interview will be paid to young people down the line. And I think that's really nice. Fair play to you, Niamh.
Yeah, thank you very
much. Take care.
Greg.
Appreciate it. Bye bye. Niamh Watson there. And just talking about her situation. Right, let's see. What shall we do next? Oh, now, tomorrow, of course, is Valentine's Day. And I suppose Valentine's Day is the face of when often it can seem the face of when everything is going well. But sometimes maybe you think it's going well, but it's not. There are red flags to look out for. And also, too, I imagine that it can be a difficult time for people living in, abusive relationships, difficult relationships that can often be difficult to get out of. And unfortunately, because we cover it extensively on this programme in conversations with various groups and on Garda Síochána, there are an awful lot of instances of domestic abuse or abuse within a relationship. Fiona O'Malley is CEO of Turn to Me and joins us on the programme now. Hello, Fiona.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Right. Okay. I think it's important for us to sort of get the message out there again of what people should look out for in their relationship. Because as I say, even sometimes there might be these red flags we're going to talk of in a relationship, but you put it down to something else. You know, the controlling behaviour is because he loves me so much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So talk to me, Fiona, about some things people should look out for in their relationship.
So there are 5 red flags that Turn to Me has just emphasised people should look out for ahead of Valentine's Day in romantic relationships, and they include gaslighting, something called love bombing, overly controlling behaviour, substance or alcohol abuse, and narcissism. And red flags, like a lot of, I suppose, issues or faults in relationships, are something that people usually spot after they've left the relationship or in hindsight. They can be sometimes difficult to spot when you're in the situation, and it can be difficult to, I suppose, see the wood from the trees. So the first one, gaslighting, that I spoke about there, it's a very common form of manipulation. It's quite a dark form of emotional abuse where the gaslighter will make you question your reality. They'll deny things that happened. They'll say things like, oh, I never said that, or no, that didn't happen. And
say, for instance, you're having a conversation and someone says to you, you know, why are you so angry? Even though it's clear that that's not, would that fall under gaslighting, that you might question your own sort of, you know, your own self and how you're perceived?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes people can call you out if you're being particularly erratic or if you do have anger moments. But if you know yourself, and if no one else has ever said that, you know, you're angry, or if you know that you're not acting in an angry way, if you're maybe just a bit frustrated by them gaslighting you, that can be where it can be difficult to pinpoint the difference between someone calling things out, calling you out if you're being inappropriate, or just gaslighting you.
And can that feed then into another red flag, which is controlling behaviour? Can it also be part of that? In other words, someone is making you doubt yourself to the point that it allows them maybe to take more control over you. In other words, I'll keep you right. Or something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if you, like, trust me, I can steer you right. You know, I know what's best for you. I'm doing this because I love you. That's definitely a form of controlling behavior. People who try to control their partners, they will try to control things that they wear, their appearance, how often they meet family and friends. Oftentimes they'll try to isolate them from their other social connections. They might control or dictate what type of career moves you might make. But in a positive and a healthy relationship, people should also have their independence and also have their own rights, and compromise is really important in most relationships. So a lot of the forms of manipulation, they can, feed into to other patterns. Like love bombing is another red flag that we have spoken about, and it's part of a cycle of abuse. It's basically when someone gives you over the top, really, I suppose, high standards of attention and affection with lavish gifts. And the goal is ultimately to make the recipient dependent on them. So these romances are often described as, you know, roller coaster, whirlwind romances. Mm. And then suddenly that attention is switched off very quickly and the recipient is confused and they'll wonder, what should I do, you know, to change his behavior or her behavior? And they might try to win that affection and that attention back to the way it was at the start of the romance. So it's very manipulating. And it, again, the ultimate aim is to try to make the recipient dependent on them.
And I think too, that these are unhealthy things, right? But and the reason why it's good to talk about them is that you might not see it when you're in that moment, or you might put it down to something else. But unfortunately, what we see in abusive relationships is it can, I'm not saying it exclusively does, but it can escalate. So it's important to spot these signs early, I presume, and to put yourself first, not your family or your children or what your friends or your neighbours might think. You have to put yourself first in a lot of these situations once you've identified that you're in an abusive or an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was talking to one of my friends about love bombing recently, and, you know, she was saying, but, you know, what's the harm with gifts, and what's the harm with, you know, having been whisked away on a weekend away? And that's great and that's lovely. I mean, I hope my boyfriend is listening to this interview. I love getting roses and I love being taken out for dinner. But the difference in that and love bombing is when it's constantly over the top at the start of the relationship and then switched off very, very quickly. And then the fourth red flag that we talk about is substance or alcohol abuse. Now, obviously, people who do suffer from substance or alcohol abuse, that's a form of illness. So there is, I suppose, compassion and empathy required there, but ultimately you can't fix another person, and you can support them and you can try to encourage them to get help, but that type of substance or alcohol abuse will have a knock-on effect on the nearest and dearest.
And Fiona, unfortunately we're against the clock, so narcissism also is an important one. Do you worry that rather than us making inroads maybe into a lot of this stuff, that we do have high profile people, I don't need to mention any names, that you could argue actually are promoting a lot of this behaviour, that in other words it's a sign of masculinity? Now we know that this can go in both directions and all directions, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that for a second, but does that worry you that, as I say, at least I'm looking down here, I'm looking at three or four of these that really are actively being promoted sometimes on social media?
Yeah, that kind of character is nearly glorified on social media, like the people who are deemed to be successful. There's nearly a glorification of someone lacking empathy and being ruthless. But when we're talking about narcissists, they crave constant admiration. They can be very sensitive to criticism. They can fly off the handle when they receive criticism, and they can blame others instead of taking ownership for their own actions or the consequences of their own actions. And that can be very, very toxic to live with and to be with. So whilst on the face of it, these people might seem like they're successful and they've got a great life, it can be very damaging for the people who are closest to them to be in their company of personality.
I'm really sorry. I wish I'd had more time with you, Fiona, but where can people help? Termtome.ie is a good place to start, I imagine. Dependent on how severe it is, obviously.
Yeah, so if anyone wants any of our free professional mental health services, we offer them 365 days a year, and they can avail of them on our website, turntome.ie.
Okay, and I hope your boyfriend was listening, Fiona, and you're not disappointed tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's the 9 till noon show for another day. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned. John Breslin's up around the Northwest next.